Clayton. John Clayton.
Mom, I'm done with my segment.
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with a professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, now is the time to text those questions into 710-710, the text line powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We'll try to get to some of your questions. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
You know, we were just talking about your favorite player, Tim Tebow, during the break. And I was reading a story that not everybody in that locker room is pleased and not everybody around the league is pleased that he's getting this opportunity that most seem to view as a publicity stunt and a money grab. What do you think? Is this something you look at and say, you know, he's taking away an opportunity from somebody else who should get a chance, or, you know, there's no guarantee he's going to make the roster. So what do you think of this whole publicity stunt?
I just think it's Urban Meyer, being a college coach, doesn't have a grasp of what it's like to have an NFL locker, to have a locker room, to have the talent levels you need. I mean, think about the lunacy of taking a 6'2", 236-pound athlete who played quarterback and has never played tight end, right? And never, that's the only position he's played in the NFL, and he hasn't played in 9 years, okay? Urban Meyer, you would guess, is going to have a running offense. I mean, he had a 1,000-yard runner last year as an undrafted rookie in James Robinson. And so what's he doing in the first round? He takes another running back. And so Urban, you know, has always tried to have some kind of a good running game. And so now you're going to ask Tim Tebow, who's never done this, has not played in 9 years, to block? I mean, please, he's 33 years old. He hasn't played in 9 years. I just don't get it. I mean, to me, it's I don't know. Why does he do it down the street and just take care of every one of his neighbors and get them to sign a contract? Because Tim Tebow's his neighbor, he coached him, he's going to coach him up and make him an NFL tight end? I don't buy it.
Well, I'm just guessing that the other neighbors aren't nearly as athletic as Tim Tebow.
No, that's true. They let's put it this way. They're not going to be as athletic, but many will be able to throw the ball better.
Oh, John.
I was going through the stats, right? And he had 14 starts in the NFL. He won 8 and he lost 6. Uh-huh. And he also won a playoff game. But the interesting part about his 8 wins, 6 of them were comeback victories in the fourth quarter. And that's because he would hit these patches in the second and third quarter where it's 3 and out. He did have 17 touchdown passes in his 14 games, but he also threw 9 interceptions. And again, 47.9% completion percentage. He had a, 6.7 yards per attempt, which is barely above the Mendoza line. And so it's like, you just watch him throw. The only throw he could make was that 7 route down the left side, and he made that one pretty good. Other than that, he was brutal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the fact that it's Urban Meyer and he's coached him in college, and it's kind of like a rah-rah move, maybe. I don't know if it's perceived that way. What is the other players are getting offended? Like,
yeah, there was a story about some in that locker room aren't happy with it because they feel like it's a publicity stunt and some sort of money grab, that he'll sell jerseys and people will buy tickets to come see him play.
Well, how dare they try to make money?
Well, rather than give somebody who they think can produce for the team at that spot.
Yeah, but what if he takes the number 0 for like a 0 chance of making the team? I think that would be okay.
So you think there's no chance he makes it?
No. I mean, what's going to end up happening is that he'll get hurt in training camp and go on the injured list.
Because I see a quote from Rex Ryan. There's no way the Jags are going to cut Tim Tebow.
Oh, jeez. Isn't that ridiculous? And again, it's like this is where it's dangerous to hire college coaches with no NFL experience, and particularly giving them power and personnel, which obviously that's the case with them signing Tim Tebow. It just doesn't work. And again, I go back to the stat that there's like 12 coaches that came into the league as pure college coaches. 12, and that was since 2000, and only one won, and that was Chip Kelly, and I wouldn't consider him a great success in the NFL.
Yeah, and the thing is, I would throw Pete in there, but he's not just college, John, because, you know, what was he, 500, I think, with the Jets and
he went to
Patriots?
500 and 500 in playoff years, because he went to play 2 playoff years.
Yeah.
So,
but then he goes back to USC.
Yeah, I'm not including Jim Harbaugh, because Jim Harbaugh was a, 16-year quarterback in this league. Quarterback coached in the NFL. And so I'm not including him. I'm including just the pure college coaches.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Well, yeah, it's kind of funny. Tim Tebow, maybe the nicest guy, seemingly anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but everything I hear, and yet he's very controversial. It's like people feel strongly about him, and I feel
people
like
John.
Well, yeah,
let's put it this way: I'm rooting for him like everybody else, but it's like it's not going to happen.
Yeah. You're not rooting for him, John. Come on,
John can't pretend, Bob. He's not pretending that Tim Tebow's going to make. Well, I think the funniest thing you said, though, was that there are people in his neighborhood that can throw better the ball.
Oh, yes, there's no doubt.
Yeah, but
I mean, let's put it this way. There's paper boys and paper women in the area that could throw better than him.
Do they still throw from their bikes like in the old days?
I think most of them drive around in cars these days and just throw it out their window.
Yeah.
I see that a lot. John, what do you make of the story that the Packers have offered Aaron Rodgers a pretty substantial extension? Is that going to make him budge at all? What do you know about that, and what do you think happens?
We don't know if it's true. I'm sure that they've tried to offer him a little bit more money, but again, he doesn't want to be there. I mean, he just doesn't trust them because, again, it's not a matter of how much he's going to make. It's how long he can be there. And as long as you have Jordan Love on the roster, then you figure they're not going to let Jordan Love sit for 4 years. I mean, again, the best thing they could do would be trade Jordan Love, and then I think Aaron can revisit things. But, I mean, you heard Devontae Adams yesterday. He talked about the idea. It's like, hey, if Aaron's not here and he warned me that he's not going to be here, then I've got to rethink about what I want to do when I get my contract negotiation going on this year because he's up at the end of the year. And so you put all that together, and we're about ready to see the breakup of the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, John, I was just reading these odds to Dave during the break. We get sent these Vegas odds every day for different things in sports. And one of the odds that they sent us was Packers starting quarterback week one if it's not Aaron Rodgers. So this is assuming Aaron Rodgers gone, who is most likely to start week one for the Packers? Jordan Love is the 3-2 favorite, followed by Derek Carr and Drew Locke, both at 4-1. Teddy Bridgewater is 5-1. The next name on the list, Russell Wilson. At 12-1.
Oh.
Ahead of Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, Garoppolo, Fitzpatrick. I found that interesting that these Vegas odds are Bet Online, I guess, is what this has him as the fifth most likely guy to open as the Packers quarterback if it's not Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, that's gonna happen. I mean, again, it's like people won't let the Russell Wilson stuff die. It's over. He's fine. He's been fine for a while. And it's like, and he was never going to be traded.
It's funny. I got the same thing, Bob, except mine was on my email. And
yeah, that's what I got.
Well, this one says Packers starting quarterback in week one. There's two guys ahead of Jordan Love.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a Drew Locke and Derek Carr.
Oh, I've got them both behind him. But either way, the fact that Russell's even there and he's fifth above all of these names.
Well, that's the stupidest thing. And then, you know, then you look at like Love. I mean, where could he possibly be? I mean, do you think, John, if they would have to make a move maybe for a guy like Drew Locke or Derek Carr, right? I mean, if Jordan Love didn't even really suit up last year.
Yeah, but of course, what's the sense of going for Drew Locke right now when Teddy Bridgewater is going to probably come in there and take the job away because, you know, he regressed so much last year. And so there's no certainty that he's a legitimate starting quarterback in this league. And, you know, that's obviously not just my opinion, but it's the opinion of the Denver Broncos who ended up trading and getting him cheap for Teddy Bridgewater.
Hmm. John, did you see the story about the Lions who were apparently on the phone with a final offer to trade up with the Falcons when the Falcons were on the clock? It didn't happen. I assume they were going after a quarterback in that situation. What do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't think they would, but Atlanta was never going to trade. I mean, they were thinking about it. They entertained offers. They kept the phones open, which, of course, is a smart thing to do. But they were either going to take Penny Sewell or they were going to take the tight end, Kyle Pitts, and of course they did take Kyle Pitts, and they feel good about that because I know they weren't going to take a quarterback after giving a redone contract to Matt Rodgers that pretty much had $68 million in remaining cap charges. You know, it's like, so he's going to be there for 2 years, but no, they liked Pitts.
So I saw also the Bucks GM saying basically that Brady hasn't told us about his long-term plans. And, you know, was saying he can play till he's 50. Not so sure about that. But I saw him at the Kentucky Derby. He was looking pretty sharp with a hat on there. But he wasn't inebriated like the last time we saw him.
And didn't have his backup helping him around.
Yeah. But what do you think, John? I mean, he loves the game.
Yeah, he does.
And, in you know, just as far as a formula of how to do it when you get older, as far as, you know, taking pay cuts here and there, getting players to come, it just seems like, you know, he's one of the guys that I feel like Aaron Rodgers should talk to him, like how to gracefully become an older quarterback in the league.
Yeah, no, you have to give him credit. And honestly, when you looked at him through all the interviews and all that stuff, I mean, didn't, because again, he takes such great care with the PB12 plan and all that stuff that, you know, he just looked younger. I mean, what, he's 33, he's going to be 44 this year. And, you know, he looked like he was in his late 20s the way he looked because of how thin he was. And again, I'm not saying thin in a bad way. I'm just saying what great shape he is and what way he takes care of his body.
Yeah, he looks better as whatever he is, 42, 43-year-old, than he did as a rookie coming out of the combine.
Ooh, that was bad.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, when you run slower than the worst offensive lineman in a draft, you're not doing too well.
It's the worst offensive lineman.
I mean, let's put it this way. Rich Eisen probably could have beaten him in a 40-yard run.
Man, that's harsh, John, but you're probably right. Yeah, you look at, I mean, his speed, everything he's worked on so much. I mean, I would say he's the, you know, you wouldn't think he's a guy that is going to scramble anytime soon, but he looks better than he did as a rookie.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it was funny because, I mean, I saw a bunch of his games as a rookie, and, you know, all he did was just so short passes. And I'm thinking, man, this is like a check down Charlie here. Mm-hmm. But then, he opened things up and did such a great job, and obviously was the greatest quarterback in the history of the National Football League. But what a remarkable talent he is. And again, sure, he breaks away from Bill Belichick. Belichick has a losing season, and Tampa Bay and Tom Brady get a Super Bowl.
John, we get these questions most days, and we got somebody hit me on Twitter with it, and as well as the text line. What's the latest with KJ? Have we heard anything?
No, nothing. I'm sure they're still talking, like Richard Sherman's talking to Seattle and talking to San Francisco. But again, the numbers aren't going to be good. And so, you know, if that is going to at least appease KJ, then something can happen. I'm sure they still want him. There's no urgency because, again, it's not like KJ is going to show up and, you know, be at the OTA. I mean, you know, because I don't know how many are over there at the facility, but I think most of the rookies will show up. And so that, I think, is going to happen. But it's like the urgency isn't there. And right now, unfortunately, KJ doesn't have a market.
John, when you talk about Sherman and he's, you know, looking to see the money that he's going to get here or there, whatever team, how many teams have decent money to hand out at this point? It feels like everybody's sort of committed to their rosters for the most part and signing draft picks. So is there a vast difference between what he would get hypothetically here in Seattle versus Las Vegas versus another team?
No, because again, I this is off the top of my head because I was doing it the other night, but I think I counted up like 14 or 15 teams that right now are pressed to have enough cap room to sign their draft choices. It's 14 or 15 teams. Now, again, you have teams like Indianapolis and Jacksonville and the New York Jets and some of the bad teams. Or Indianapolis is a good team, but no, you have more teams right now that are struggling to be able to, you know, have to create cap room. And that's why this is going to be an interesting period because we're seeing guys, you know, that are going to be cut and will be cut for cap reasons or have to restructure their contracts. But in the end, it's like you got to do it. So it's going to be tough. And most of the 4-3 teams don't have an opening right now for an outside linebacker. And I can't imagine that a 3-4 team is going to go after KJ because he's a 4-3 linebacker, a long, angular, very good 4-3 linebacker, but not in a 3-4.
That's going to be one of those questions we get all year, kind of like Justin Britt.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah.
John, what have you heard about Justin Britt?
He signed
with Houston.
Oh, he did sign with Houston?
Yeah, he signed with Houston. I mean, I don't think he's there right now because he's probably honoring the boycott. But, he signed with Houston.
I don't remember that happening.
Yeah.
I do. Bob does.
A couple of months ago, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, can you tell me the exact day?
No.
No.
Well, there.
Yeah, but at least
you showed us.
You guys couldn't remember.
Well, you didn't even know.
Yeah.
What's it better, not to be able to remember the date or just not to know?
It's better to just not know.
Yeah.
Definitely. Blissfully unaware.
Yeah, exactly. John, I was looking at Adam Rank over on NFL.com. It's kind of some interesting ways to break down the offseason. One is, you know, player that you're most excited to watch. And, you know, I know that you're unbiased, but, I mean, I'd substitute it maybe with interesting because he has Carolina Panthers and Sam Darnold. And I'm very fascinated there. Chicago, Justin Fields, you know, getting to know the people in Chicago, you know, as far as what's been going on there with the quarterback. I'm kind of rooting for Justin Fields because, you know, they just haven't had what? They haven't had a 4,000-yard passer,
mm-hmm.
or actually a 3,000-yard passer, and they haven't had...
Well, they've had a 3,000.
No, 4,000 yards. They haven't had a 4,000-yarder and not 30 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Only 29 touchdowns is the highest. So, yeah, I'm kind of...
Here's where I'm worried about Justin Fields is that, all right, we realize that, you know, of the quarterbacks in this draft, he probably most reminds you of Russell Wilson because he's always trying to, you know, move around, get that extra move to try to get away from somebody trying to chase him down. But he also holds the ball too long sometimes and gets sacked. And so he got sacked, I think, probably more than any of the other quarterbacks of the top five taken. But the thing that I worry about, you know, they cut Charles Leno at left tackle. They didn't bring back Bobby Massey at right tackle. And it's not like they're great in the interior offensive line. And so now all of a sudden, he goes to a team that doesn't have a real good running game and now is going to be asked to do so much. And you wonder, is he just going to get bludgeoned and beat up and all those different things? So I kind of worry about that.
Yeah, you hope not. Seahawks, by the way, Dan Rank selected DK Metcalf. Lots of people mm-hmm. want to see that. But you know what? Washington football team, J.D. McKissic.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? I mean, and, you know, we loved him while he mm-hmm. was here. He's one of my favorites. But I'm really happy to see him there having success. I think a lot of the turnover there has to do with Ron Rivera. What an inspiring story that guy is. And, you know, this he could actually turn this team around if they can get a quarterback.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. Say what you want. They didn't have a winning record, but they did make the playoffs.
Exactly.
And they did it with Alex Smith at quarterback.
Yep.
And really, when you look at their defense with all those first-round defensive linemen and some of the plays they added so far this year, you know, William Jackson, a cornerback, I think right now, you know, they, and particularly with Ron Rivera out there on defense, they have a chance to be one of the best defenses in football.
John, the 208 asking, or no, 206, I'm sorry. Hello, Professor. With the upcoming 17-game season rapidly approaching, where do you see the Rams ending up? And they have 12-5, question mark, Seahawks. 9-8? Question mark. What do you think?
I'd say right now that the San Francisco, Seattle, and the Rams are all pretty close. I still give the edge to Seattle because again, you know, they've improved their defensive line, their offensive line, and you look at the Rams and you know they're lesser on defense because of the losses in free agency because of the $42.2 million cap hit they have for Matthew Stafford and the dead money for Jared Goff. You know, because they lose John Johnson and Ekwonu and at linebacker and traded away Michael Brockers, and so that's a lot to lose. When you have 10 free agents and you lose them all and the only one you're able to keep was Leonard Floyd, that's tough. And so San Francisco, certainly with Jimmy Garoppolo coming back, but we don't know if he can stay healthy. But if he stays healthy, they're going to be in the fight. And Arizona's not too far behind. I mean, literally, I know one odd maker came out today and had, you know, I think 10.5 for San Francisco and the Rams, 10 for the Seahawks, and 8 for the Cardinals. And that's pretty good.
Hey, John, we were doing our battle royale of the NFC West here, just kind of comparing positions. And look, quarterback, it's Russell Wilson,
right.
Number one. I'm sorry. Some people were saying differently. But, you know, but then after that, is it Kyler Murray? Is it Matthew Stafford or Jimmy Garoppolo or Trey Lance?
Now, I'd say Matthew Stafford 2, Kyler Murray 3. And, you know, Lance, I mean, he's an incomplete right now because we don't know if he could even play much in the first year. So he's an incomplete. But, you know, I think, you know, Garoppolo would be number 3. And, I mean, Murray would be number 3. But Stafford has to be number 2. I mean, you're talking about a guy that was the first pick in the draft. I know that doesn't necessarily mean a lot. But he was a good quarterback for all the years. The only problem is they didn't get enough good surrounding talent for him.
Yeah, and he never had a defense while he was there. Then we're looking at running back groups. So just, you know, two guys, Chris Carson, Rashad Penny here.
Mm-hmm.
Chase Edmonds and James Conner, a guy from Pittsburgh. There, Chase Edmonds, nice little scat back. The ones I think we agreed on that we thought was number one, Cam Akers and Darrell Henderson. Cam Akers, a second-round draft choice,
yeah.
And he chewed the Seahawks up pretty good last year. And then you got Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson. Where would you – I mean, with Chris Carson and Rashad Penny, I think, to me, if those guys are healthy, they're number one all day long.
Mm-hmm,
but that's the biggest issue for them. It's not talent, it's health.
Yeah, agreed. And that's the thing you wonder about because you don't know where Penny is right now. Certainly he was well behind last year because of the knee. But, you know, I think if you get a little bit of him toward the end of his rookie season when he was healthy, you know, he was pretty good. And That I think would have given Seattle the edge. I like Akers too. I think, in fact, I think Seattle was looking to draft him as a possibility when he was up there, but they didn't get him because obviously they had Penny coming back and all those different things. And Chris Carson, you can make the argument, is right now the most established and best running back in this division.
Mm-hmm. So what a tight ends, we gave it to, obviously, we gave it to the 49ers with George Kittle.
George Kittle. But we had the Seahawks second because, you know, look, Will Disley, the problem with him last year is they didn't target him. I think he had 27 targets.
But remember, look at the Tampa Bay formula. I mean, when you have a great wide receiver duo and they have Chris Godwin and then they have Mike Evans, the ball isn't going to go to the tight ends as much. That's as simple as that, because when you got one of the best wide receiver duos, the wide receivers get the ball.
John, how many people in your neighborhood can throw the ball better than Tim Tebow?
Let's see. Well, Scott Service, he'd be able to throw the ball better. I'd say probably of the 118 homes here, I could probably find 40 or 50.
Are you one of them, John?
I'm not one of them, no, because I'm not good at throwing the football. Okay. I could probably find about maybe, you know, 6 or 7 wives that can be able to throw the football better.
Okay.
Okay, well,
John,
we'll compile that list.
Yeah, get him a tryout in Jacksonville. All right, John, we'll talk tomorrow.
All right, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, why now for Jared Kelnick? We'll talk about that next, about the timing of the call-up and everything that goes with it, with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up at the top of the hour, you look forward to it every week, El Hombre. Michael Bradley will be with us. Talk some... World, just talk about everything with him. World of sports. We've covered all with Michael Bradley, so that is coming up. Meanwhile, do you think Clayton's got an arm at all? Do you think he could outthrow Tim Tebow, or that he does actually have number of neighbors that could outthrow Tim Tebow?
I know for a fact that John does not have an arm.
He admitted as much.
Yeah, we watched it. He did throw out the first pitch, and I was trying to train him on – I'm not maybe the best guy for that, but we did a whole hokey video where he was going to throw out the first pitch, and so I was down there training him, and so we were doing football drills.
Yeah.
And then we got like a close-up of him pumping off these reps on the bench.
Yeah.
And then we showed the stack of, you know, weights on the outside.
Pull the camera back.
Yep. And then it was like a broom he was pushing or something. But yeah, he was like looking at third base as he threw the ball home. I'm like, John, what are you doing? But no, I don't think I'm sure Tim Tebow can still whip it pretty good.
Yeah,
it's not like he can't throw a football. It just he just wasn't an NFL quarterback.
Boy, it's amazing. He had a season where his completion percentage, the season he played the most games, 47.5.
He should have played in the 70s.
He would have been bad for then. I mean, Bradshaw was 51.5, right?
Oh, they were around, right around 50.
47.5% completion percentage.
Ugh. Yeah. Well, and they just had to keep it. I just remember seeing some of the throws. I'm just like, wow, you just don't see that in the NFL. You don't see that bad of throws. But, you know, I don't know. I think people love to hate him because, you know, I think he's a good guy. I think he spoke out about some things that, you know, some people, it rubbed them the wrong way. I think that
he's very out there with his religious beliefs.
So are a lot of guys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, we hear guys in interviews all the time talk about it. So, yeah, I don't know. I just feel like something tells me I kind of want to defend him a little bit. But I don't think he can play football in the NFL.
I'm pulling for it. I don't know what kind of a tight end he'll be. I've got no clue if he can do anything. I mean, it's a long shot, I would say, for him to make the roster, as much as Rex Ryan says there's no way Jacksonville will cut him. I would say, way. There
that's
is.
Well, I don't but, know why he would say that. Why would he say that? I guess, know. You know, that's what we're supposed to say.
I guess. I don't know. To me, I'm along the lines of Clayton. I'm not saying there's absolutely no way he'll make the roster. I would put it at a long shot, though.
Oh, huge long shot.
You've got Clayton and Rex Ryan at opposite ends saying very emphatically there's no way they'll cut him, and then Clayton saying there's no way he makes the roster.
It's weird down in Jacksonville because, you know, we talked about the culture down there and how – it's not good, and is it maybe the owner, Shad Khan? And I know his son was getting in Twitter battles with Unique Ngakoue. And now you bring this college guy in there, and then he does kind of a college thing. He, you know, gets Tim Tebow, a guy who he knew from college, and brings him in there. I'm trying to think, was it Bobby Petrino? Well, he coached in Atlanta, I think. And then he was the guy, I think, that left a note goodbye to everybody on their lockers.
he certainly did.
See you guys. I'm going back to college.
This was great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Nick Saban, not good. Coaching the Miami Dolphins. Went back to college.
Lou Holtz, didn't he?
Was it Lou Holtz in the NFL?
Did he go, was he with the Jets? I have to look up Lou Holtz.
I thought
he had a little run in the NFL.
Look, you can make the transition. I believe that. It's just that, you know, it's kind of a different culture in the NFL. It's a little bit different, and, you know, it's the business side of it. I mean, look, in college, everybody has a scholarship, and you're getting free, you know, education and room and board and all that. And then in the NFL, it becomes more about business, and there's less of the sort of camaraderie and good feeling. It's in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that, you know, that some of the guys like – you know, if you're Urban Meyer, you're pretty set in your ways, and you pretty much think you know how to run a football team.
Yeah.
But you don't.
Well, he's
not necessarily.
He might have a pretty
rude
nice
awakening.
Picture of how, pretty, you know, nice view of himself and his football acumen. And we'll ask Alombre about that, as he likes to refer to him as what, Pope Urban the Fourth or something like that. We'll get his take on this whole thing with Tebow, but... I root for him. He seems like a good enough guy to me. I don't have to agree with him on everything, but he just seems like his intentions are good and he's a nice guy. But I would put it at a really long, long shot that he makes the roster. But I think there's some value to his presence in a locker room potentially. I don't know. You know, I read that story about, you know, some players are not happy about this. The bottom line is feeling like it's a publicity stunt and it's taking a spot or the chance away from somebody who actually could contribute versus him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. You've been in that locker room. I don't know if that's realistic or not. But
well, the fact that there's grumblings there, and you have a group of professionals, you're hearing that, and now all of a sudden this kind of sideshow comes in. If it is truly happening, then it's a problem. It probably needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. Right? John, as much as he says he likes him, he doesn't sound like he likes him. He's like, I don't have anything against him. I kind of think you do.
I think he's mad because John said it was impossible for them to beat the Steelers in the playoffs. And
they did.
He's absolutely not. No way. And I think Tebow went like 4 for 8 or
something. Oh, it was a brutal stat line. It was terrible, but did enough to win.
Yeah.
What did he say? He came back. John said something about, he got lucky or they choked or something like that.
Well, no, that was the one where I told him the Jets were going to beat the Chargers in the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because the Jets, that was with Mark Sanchez. They had great defense, great running game. He's like, no chance. And then when we came back and I was right and he was wrong, he was like, they choked. Like, you're not going to get any satisfaction arguing with Clayton. Like if it goes back, he'll go, they didn't work out. That guy got hurt. It's
choked.
Like he's trying to get out of the bet. You know?
Yeah, like I wasn't wrong. They choked.
Yeah.
If they didn't choke, I would have been right.
Yeah. Exactly.
If they didn't lose, I would have been right, Dave.
that's pretty much the mentality there.
That's an interesting approach to losing a bet there.
Well, I might look into it. It sounds kind of appealing to me.
Had the team I bet on wrong. Scored more points, I would have been right.
Yeah, but they didn't. They choked.
That's awesome. We're going to talk about Kelnick.
Hey, let's talk about Kelnick.
That's the big story around the Mariners. We're waiting to get the official word. Scott Service was on with Jake and Stacy today, and in case you missed, I'll play that cut really quickly because Stacy asked the question and Scott answered in a way that most politicians answer questions when they don't want to give you an answer.
I heard from a friend that you guys are promoting Jared Kelnick and bringing him up on Thursday. Is that happening?
We have conversations all the time about a number of our prospects.
Scott.
We've got guys that are very close to being ready to help us here at the major league
Scott.
Level. We'll continue to talk about that stuff, and then we'll get... I just got in my office here at Dodger Stadium. I'm trying to get ready to play the Dodgers, Stacy. You know, but understand there's reports out there, whatnot, but, my job here is to make sure our guys are ready to play tonight against a really good Dodger team, and that's what I'm focused on.
All right. So a very good non-answer. very, very politician-like.
You know? He's like, hey, I just got here in my office at Dodger. For some reason, I was thinking they were playing the Dodgers here, but of course, they were here last time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's like, hey, I'm just getting situated here. What the heck?
Yeah, he's not confirming, but he certainly didn't deny, and that is the report that he'll be called up Thursday. We will be out at T-Mobile Park broadcasting live Thursday and Friday this week, so that'll be fun to be out there, and hopefully he does get called up. It creates a little buzz, some excitement about the team, and right now still above 500. We'll see how things end up, but more importantly, does he add a spark to the lineup? Or do we look at it and say, you know, oh boy, I'm worried about him becoming Zunino and Ackley and Smoke. He's up too soon. There's going to be a lot of conversation on all sides of this. And a lot of it obviously will depend on how he does out of the gates. Does he struggle out of the gates? And people on the side of it's too soon saying, see, I told you. Or he goes, you know, 2-for-4 with a home run and he's got a hit in his first 5 games. And the people on the other side saying, see, told you he was different. I mean, it's going to be very compelling to watch him and just see how he does.
Yeah, and it looks like he's scheduled to face Zach Plesac, who has got a 3.83 ERA, 31 strikeouts, 1.03 whip. You know, that everything is going to be so scrutinized. Like, I'm going to watch every pitch with Jared Kelnick of, you know, how is he – look at his behavior up there. Is he looking confident? I mean, if he comes up here and just starts ripping it, what are you going to think? I feel like
I'm going to think awesome.
I'm going to think that, but I'm like, okay, but there's something coming. This can't be. It can't be like this every night.
Yeah, you know? you'll wonder, all right, let's wait until the league gets tape on them.
When's the correction
coming? Yeah, they're going to find the hole in the swing. It happens to every single player, right. And it's the chess game. That's what makes baseball so fun is just watching the maneuvers. All right, they made an adjustment. Now they know you struggle with pitches up and in or whatever it is. There's always a hole in the swing somewhere. You see the hot and cold zones they put on TV and you pitch this guy low and away or you don't pitch him low and away. You pitch him up and out, whatever it is. He can't hit the breaking ball. He can't hit off speed stuff. They're going to find that weakness and try to exploit it. And we get to see at that point, how does he adjust? How long does it take for him to adjust? Does he get frustrated or does he just sort of power his way through it and no big deal because of that confidence? It's everything about his presence is really compelling. So I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully we'll get official word here sometime soon. Meanwhile, is Aaron Rodgers now creating a full-on mutiny? We'll tell you what we're talking about when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
So we have a heavy Green Bay feel to our Sweeping the Dial today. Kind of a Wisconsin theme to the show today. Jared Kelnick, we got a lot of Packers talk. So Davante Adams, we've heard a lot about Aaron Rodgers. Davante Adams says he really might follow his quarterback if he leaves Green Bay.
Potentially. I mean, that's my guy. That's the only guy that I've had other than that 2017 season when he got hurt. It's the only guy that I played with. And, we built up a special connection over the years that has made it, put us both in really good positions in our career. Not that he needed me to come along for it because he was already in that spot, but we established a lot together. So it would change a lot, man. Doesn't mean potentially I'd be gone, but, I'd definitely have to do some extra thinking if my guy wasn't here.
Extra thinking. We brought this up yesterday. We saw this story and hearing him say it, you're talking about one of the best receivers in the entire NFL. He was fifth in the league this year with 1,374 receiving yards. He did it in 14 games. He had 18 touchdowns, Dave. 18.
He's fantastic.
He's had other years with 13, 12, 10. So he's had 4 seasons of double-digit touchdowns, capped off by 18 this year in 14 games. So that would be a huge loss, not only for the Packers, not only to lose Aaron Rodgers, but imagine losing one of the best wide receivers in the league as well.
Yeah, and I don't know, he's just supporting his guy. I wonder if other players there have similar dealings with the front office.
What if we find out this is a consensus, but it's all being, most other guys feel the same way, they just haven't verbalized it.
Yeah, I think that there's the normal business amount, you're going to have those kinds of discussions that are going to be difficult. And whenever it comes down to money and, I'm just trying to think through, like Mike Shanahan when he was cutting my pay and how I felt about him. Of course, you don't like that stuff. But, if it's done in an upfront manner, Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, look, we don't know exactly what went on, but as far as drafting Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers, who I think already has a hard time finding happiness, you know, because your NFL MVP, rock star girlfriend or fiance, I should say, hosting Jeopardy. And, you know, by all accounts, from what I understand, he was like the highest rated guest.
Was he? I heard that's going on through the summer.
Yeah, guest host, I should say. Yeah. It's going through the whole summer. Yeah, I know they've had like Anderson Cooper and, you know, all these other people.
Penn Jennings, and isn't LeVar Burton doing it? And
is he? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I wonder how much of it is on him and how much of it is on the management. But the one thing that we have pretty well established is that nobody called him and told him that they were going to draft Jordan Love.
Well, interestingly enough, Davante Adams' comments might be because Aaron Rodgers is pulling some strings behind the scenes. Ian Rappaport says there might be a mutiny underway from Rodgers.
They are not in a good place. They are not happy with each other. The Packers have done a lot of different things to try to make Aaron Rodgers happy, to try to get him to kind of come back to them a little bit. They've made a significant long-term contract extension offer, and the two sides have been negotiating, so it's not like they've just been talking to themselves here. There certainly has been some engagement from Rodgers' side. We know something that Mike Garofalo reported last week, that Rodgers has talked to several different players about joining him somewhere else. However, of course, as we know, the Packers have zero plans whatsoever to trade him.
Yeah, that would be, you know, him. Hey, come join me somewhere else. A, he doesn't know where he's landing. B, who knows what the needs of that team are? Do they need wide receivers? Do they need tight ends or O-line or whoever he's saying, come join me? I mean, how do you know that the team has the room financially or needs those positions to be addressed?
Right.
So the idea that there's an unspecified landing spot and, hey, come join me there, doesn't feel very realistic. Now, the idea that they've offered him a lucrative long-term extension just keeps emphasizing how poorly they handled the draft pick with Jordan Love. Again, they moved up to take him rather than draft a weapon. And now they're not only not committing to him, they're trying to commit to the guy that's already there for a number of years, which makes that pick look worse every time it's talked about.
Well, we haven't heard that much from their side, you know, and so, and kind of like how the Seahawks handled it, they were just kind of innocent about it the whole time. Like, we didn't do anything. We really didn't do anything wrong. Except, you know, we made mistakes like we normally do because we got eliminated in the first round of the draft, mm-hmm. First round of the playoffs. So have you imagined a world where if you got LaFleur and Goody, as they call him, the GM, and, mm-hmm. and they're like, guys, we tried to tell him, you know, we've been very upfront with him. He's just a drama.
What if they were? But even if they were upfront with him, wouldn't you still go, it's a dumb pick. What are you doing? Why would you move up to draft this kid, and now you're in a position where you're doing everything? You're throwing money at the guy that already occupies the spot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, how old is he? Is he
Aaron?
Yeah.
He's 36, I think, 37.
37.
I mean, I'll look
and
it
maybe
up.
He indicated to them, you know, he may have indicated to them that he only wants to play for another year or two, or maybe he only wants to be here a couple of years. I don't know. I just, you know,
37.
I'm not just taking one side of
right.
Just because Aaron Rodgers, it does look really bad. I'm just saying, with the amount of information that we have, it does look bad. Like, they blew that. They blew the relationship between themselves and Aaron Rodgers. But things could be different. And, you know, I don't know. He seems kind of – I'm always like, why does Aaron Rodgers' family not like him?
I don't know.
I mean, this is sort of the drama side of it, but it's strange.
That's another one we don't know both sides of the story. Like I said, maybe his family are jerks. We don't know.
Yeah. Everybody else is a jerk, and Aaron is a really
Well, how many
nice
people
guy.
Are we talking about? Is his
Well, we're
mom,
talking
dad,
about
and
the mom, dad, brother, head coach, GM.
Well, I don't know. I have no idea what his family is.
I'm just saying, let's use our imagination. That's all. You know, Clayton couldn't play because he can't pretend. I'm just saying, let's act like maybe that could be the case.
It certainly could be. He could be a giant horse's behind. I have got no idea. But if we're going to say, hey, we haven't heard the Packers side of the story, well, we haven't heard Aaron's side of the story with the family thing either. We don't know anything about his family. I don't, anyway. I won't pretend to know his family. So yeah. They could be crazy people. We don't know. Might not be his fault.
Well, things just aren't going well in the NFC North. Matt Nagy, who might not have a lot of time left, was asked, are the Bears in win-now mode or developing Justin Fields? He said, well, they're going to do both.
Are the Bears in win-now mode or are they in development mode or both?
No, I would say both. We feel like right now with this roster that we've built over the last several years that we really believe that right now we're in a great position to go out and win a lot of games and win right now. With that said, we are building somewhat of a younger roster now where we as a coaching staff have to be able to develop these players that we're drafting. So there'll be a great plan for that. But we're so excited for the future in the 2021 season.
I understand why people would look at that and go, what? What are you talking about? The Seahawks did it. It's exactly what the Seahawks did. They won with Russell Wilson. They managed him. They didn't put it all on his plate as a rookie. We talked about it. He was throwing for barely 200 yards a game, and people were complaining about it at the time, remember? And they unleashed him. They do very well, almost won in that game against the Falcons very next year. They're a Super Bowl team. So it was a young team, young Richard Sherman, young Doug Baldwin. Yeah, they were a really young team that was winning at the same time and developing a quarterback. So it can be done.
Yeah, I like how he said both. I mean, what's he going to say? Oh, it's going to be a total teardown. It's going to be a disaster. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to have to wait. I'm kind of pulling for him. Like I said, once we talked to the guy in Chicago about the situation in there as far as their quarterbacks historically, and it can't be the city. It's like we talk about, first of all, Ohio State, they can't develop quarterbacks for whatever reason.
NFL level.
Even though it's been a whole bunch of different coaches doing it.
It's just a weird trend.
And then Chicago, they can't get a quarterback to throw over – 3,000 yards and
4,000
yards and 30 touchdowns.
Yeah.
29 touchdowns is the most.
It's crazy.
Russ just threw for over 40. I'm pulling for him.
All right. This happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, El Hombre. Michael Bradley joins us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.